racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
It's that time again, time for In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. And yes, we're still staying safe at home, much like the rest of the country. I'm Bob Bubka, here with Mr. STL Golf Geek himself, Jay Randolph Jr. I trust you're keeping away from most of the people.
Well, in a sense I am, but in a sense I'm not. When you are at a pro shop, and I just looked at our tee sheet for today, we have 263 players.
Wow.
So, doing my best to stay safe. I don't know that the rest of the country necessarily is. The state that you and our executive producer, Janice Self, reside in has seen a dramatic spike. Arizona has seen a spike. Florida has seen a spike. You could make an argument that those are three of the five or six biggest golf states in the United States. Again, I find it fascinating how little not only we seem to know, but at times how little information we seem to get. But life must progress. I am progressing. I'll be saying hello to the patrons that come to Gateway National tomorrow. We had PGA Tour golf the last 2 weeks. Major League Baseball is hopeful moving through. And, hopefully as things progress, we'll have fewer spikes. And down the road, we'll get a vaccination or something. And, I think people say the new normal. I don't know what that is or what it's going to be. And I don't think anybody does yet.
Well, I think that's a good point. But actually, I spent most of my adult life waking up not knowing what my normal was going to be that day, so I've had plenty of practice.
Yeah, this is old hat for you.
Not good news from the PGA Tour. Of course, last week we had Nick Watney confirmed with the virus, and then just in the last couple of days, Cameron Champ also diagnosed with the virus. So it's a little bit scary on the tour, but, you know, they seem to be doing all right. They're certainly doing their best to try and navigate around the perils of this virus, but it's a tricky situation.
Well, as we've talked about, the apparent benefit as it relates to the game of golf as opposed to other sports, it's not necessarily a team sport. You don't have to gather five in a huddle in a group to set the play for basketball, or have 30 guys in a dugout, or have, 53 or 55 on a sideline in close proximity. When you're going to test 400 or 500 people each week, you're going to get some positives. We saw the first week in Fort Worth where there was nobody that tested positive. And at the beginning of the week, Nick Watney was a negative. But that changed during the course of the week. So we know that they're doing everything they can. I believe one of the players that was paired with him the opening day was Corey Connors. I wondered what a guy like that would feel like. But, Bob, there's going to be cases. And Nick Watney's such a good guy. Apparently he's okay. But if he only has had it for less than a week, is it fair to say he's okay? I mean, a lot of things up in the air. The players, the caddies, the people at the event are the ones that really have to police it. And as you know all too well, in this game, we police it ourselves for the most part. So I've certainly enjoyed the golf. We've had two great final rounds to watch with a lot of star talent. And you just hope as we keep progressing that the numbers don't rise. We're about a month away now from the PGA Tour being hopeful to have 5,000 or 8,000 people watch the golf at the Memorial as they're going to play back-to-back weeks at Muirfield Village. It's all based on what happens the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, there's a couple of obviously big issues that certainly difficult for the players. Once they leave the golf course, they have to buy in to staying isolated. And, that's a pretty tough thing to do. You leave the golf course and try and get to your hotel room and then order room service, but don't let the server come in. I mean, it's a whole different style than they're used to.
Yeah, my understanding, and I could be wrong, but I heard that Watney went and picked something up at a takeout place, and that might have been where he contracted it. It's not a lot of fun doing six nights in a row room service. You like to have at least a little variety. But that being said, if you're going to do this, you may follow the route of like the JT and Ricky and a couple other guys, get a house, bring a chef, have it all monitored and prepared. I mean, they're at that level as it relates financially where they can afford to do that. It's kind of in a way every man for themselves. They're independent contractors. They have the right to pick and choose how they go about virtually doing everything. And, Nick Watney's such a good dude. And it'll be interesting as we get a couple of weeks in, Bob. And the other thing that's fascinating me, and we'll talk a little bit about it, it's like the same guys are playing. It's like they looked at the schedule and said, I'm coming out of it. I mean, virtually almost the guys that we're going to talk about, like the DJs and Rory and DeChambeau and Shoffley and JT and Webb Simpson, they've all decided, hey, I'm playing right off the bat, and I'm playing at least the first 3 weeks.
Yeah, you know what's amazing? With the PGA Tour, this aspect is a dream scenario because every event has nothing but huge megastars competing, and you can't blame the players. They realize that, they're behind the eight ball a little bit. They want to play. They want to try and get back to somewhat normal in this difficult set of circumstances. Let me ask you this, Mr. Randorf. Do you think now we're even leaning towards maybe the PGA Tour is going to play the rest of the year without fans?
I think based on the first 2 weeks, I think if you ask the players, many of them might say, yeah, that might be our best play. I don't know if you can do that throughout the whole year financially. Somebody has to be subsidizing that lack of revenue. Not that it's bigger than the sponsorship dollars, but it still is a number. The PGA Championship's going to be played with no fans, and that comes after what the PGA Tour says is going to be a couple of weeks with fans. The PGA got the okay to go with Harding Park in San Francisco, but no fans is going to be unique for a major championship. I mean, it's unique every week, but it's going to be even more unique in a major championship. I mean, Bob, I think about the first PGA I ever attended, which was 92. In fact, I think it was the first time I ever met you, 92, and Janice, 92 in St. Louis at Belle Reve Country Club. And at that time, it was the most successful financial PGA championship in the history. And when I think of the growth of the corporate situation, of the media center, of the merchandise center, I mean, if you've ever been to a PGA championship in the last 10 or 15 years, just think about how big the merchandise center was and how much those manufacturers sold and how much the PGA of America made. 92 was the last time that the golf professional, the host professional, owned the merchandise. A guy named Jerry Tucker. And Jerry basically retired after that and moved to Florida. So, at some point, some of the dollars and cents with lack of fans have to be talked about. Bob, how about all the rows of sponsorship tents? I mean, those things go 25, 50, 100 grand. That's not going to be there. So, I love it because we're getting to see great golf. We're set to have a major championship August 6th through 9th at a fantastic venue, Harding Park. but nobody's going to be there.
You know, it's quite a quandary. I got to be honest with you. Janice Self, our executive producer, has been in negotiations with Talk Sport. As you know, I work for, it's the world's largest sports radio station. And we're trying to come up with a decision on, do I do it remotely? Do I go on site? I mean, a lot of heavy decisions have to come about. And then right after that, you know, we'll be facing the same dilemma when we go to Wingfoot for the United States Open, and down to Augusta in November for the Masters. So, you know, I hate even complaining about that. We have to talk about this.
Because, but it's a factor, Bob.
I know it's a factor, but in reality, the families and people that have been affected, you know, seriously and lost loved ones from this ugly virus, they're the ones that my heart goes out to. I'm not really worried if I do it on site or I do it off site. You and I could, you know, we could probably do the, you know, a moon landing right now remotely, and nobody would know the difference.
Yeah, I mean, but you're right, Bob. And then but you have to look at the other side. Think of all the people we know in the infrastructure of golf. Who's going to get credentialed for the PGA Championship? I mean, is it only going to be, I mean, is it Doug Ferguson? And that's the guy that's going to report to everybody, the guy from the AP that's always there? I don't know. I mean, obviously, it'll be limited media. So this thing is clearly affecting people's lives. Now, the PGA of America, while they said, okay, we'll have our signature championship for our organization, the PGA Championship, without fans, it is moving closer and closer. Not official yet, but it's starting to look like the Ryder Cup is going to be postponed until 2021. Now, how come in August you can play the PGA Championship with no fans in San Francisco, but you can't play the Ryder Cup in Kohler, Wisconsin a month later for the Ryder Cup? Or is it a case, as we've talked about here, Bob, on the Grill Room, where a number of European players and some United States players have said, hey, it ain't the Ryder Cup if you don't have the fans in the field? Is that the reason for the decision? So, you know, it's a tough job. I mean, when these guys took their positions at the relative organizations, I'm not sure they ever thought they'd be in this type of position where they're having to think about thousands and thousands of lives that could be affected by having a tournament or whether or not to have people there. So it doesn't look like we're going to have a Ryder Cup, but it does look like we're going to have a PGA.
I have to echo your sentiments. I mean, a PGA championship without fans, I see is highly doable. It'll be very entertaining. The people on TV and, you know, the millions of fans around the world that'll be watching. But it's a different animal when you get to the Ryder Cup. I think the Ryder Cup fans are as much a part of the Ryder Cup as the players that are making the golf shots. I mean, and I don't think one goes without the other. If we have to wait a year to celebrate going to Herb Kohler's place at Whistling Straits and keep a lot of people safe, then I think that's the right decision. And I agree with you, Jay. I think they're awfully close to making that announcement. It's not official yet. But boy, would I be surprised. I would be flabbergasted. I'll even go so far as I don't think it's going to happen. There will be no Ryder Cup unless there are fans. Anyway, let's get back to what happened last week, Jay, the RBC Heritage. Great week for the winner, Webb Simpson, and his fabulous caddy, Paul DeSori. Let's give a listen now to what Simpson had to say.
I won the Players on Mother's Day after my dad passed away, and that was really special, especially it had been 3.5, 4.5 years maybe since I won. That was an emotional win. U.S. Open on Father's Day, I'll never forget calling my dad after on the way to the press conference. And when he picked up the phone, he just was laughing, you know, and that's kind of what he did when he was his happiest. He would just laugh. And so I'm going to miss that laugh today for sure. But I thought a lot about him. This morning I thought about him, and when I was on the golf course I thought about him. And yeah, I started wearing yellow on Sundays in his honor. Yellow was his favorite color, and my kids know that. Whenever they give me a card, it's always in yellow crayon or yellow marker. So still, you know, feeling my dad all around me from memories, and he loved golf. He would have loved watching today. Thrilled to death to be sitting here as the champion for many reasons. I'm an RBC ambassador, so that makes it special. I love this golf course. I love this area. I've never quite gotten it done here. You know, I was close in 2013, losing to Graham McDowell in the playoff. So it feels great. And honestly, you know, the last kind of 10 holes were a blur because guys are making birdies. We're trying to finish before night comes. And so to finish with, you know, five birdies like that was really special. And especially after going kind of yesterday in the first 10 holes, 11 holes today, not making putts, to see the putts go in when I needed them, that was really, really fun to see the ball going in the hole.
Jay, if I were to pick a PGA Tour professional and try and match him up with the ideal course, I would have to say Webb Simpson is ideally suited for Harbortown.
I would agree. And he talked about playing well there before, but just never getting to the winner's circle and getting the tartan jacket that they award there. Speaking of that, Daniel Berger looked like he might go back-to-back tartan jackets from Colonial to Harbortown. But Webb put the hammer down, Bob. I mean, you know, he plays the last 7 and 5 down. Guys around him are making birdies, but it didn't faze him. I mean, his confidence, and you talked about his caddy, the relationship that they have, not only as player caddy, but player coach. You know, I mean, you heard, I can't remember the exact quote, but I think it was maybe on 16 or 17 when he hit a close shot before the shot. Sasori said, be committed. You got this. And you know, there's a difference when it's a combination of your caddy and the guy that works with you. I mean, Webb Simpson is a unique guy. Probably should have won more times, maybe a major or two more. But he's got a Players. He's got a U.S. Open. He's got five kids. He's a great man of faith. And I'm telling you, birdies at 15, 16, and 17, he just said, hey, boys. Hey, Abe. Hey, Berger. Hey, Tyrrell. Hey, Sergio. It ain't happening. I'm winning this golf tournament, and he did.
Well, it's understandable that he probably hasn't won more, like you alluded to. He's got to be a little bit tired. Five children. I mean, good golly. I mean, my hat's off to him. He's a outstanding ambassador for this sport. I mean, you can't pick anybody any better. Ironically enough, it just flashed back to me when he's talking about wearing yellow. I remember covering an Open Championship. Might be at, wasn't that Royal Birkdale? I can't think of where it was, but Sergio Garcia was in the hunt, and it was going to be paired with Tiger, and he showed up on the first tee wearing a yellow shirt, and he got all kinds of abuse because they said that's a weak color. He's already throwing in the flag. Look at that. He's wearing yellow. And now, a few years later, we see Webb Simpson wear yellow, and it's certainly not a weak shirt for Webb.
How about Sergio? 70? 65, 65, 65. He doesn't even get a sniff. He finishes tied for fifth, three back. Keep an eye on Sergio this week. As I said earlier, Bob, it's interesting because, you know, you look at that leaderboard, and Answer's been playing well, obviously. Berger, a recent winner. Hatton had won his previous start at Bay Hill the last time he played in a PGA Tour event. He shoots 20 under. So, and I think the other thing that we saw, Bob, there's a difference in Harbortown mid to late June than the second week of April or third week of April. I mean, it's the wind was a little bit not less of a factor. It obviously is hotter down there and a little firmer. Unique golf course. And the other thing I cannot go without mentioning, Abraham Answer led the field in driving accuracy, which then led him to lead the field field in proximity to the hole. I mean, this guy shoots 69, 64, 65, and 65, and he gets a handshake for second. I mean, and a lot of dough.
It's getting tougher out there. Answer did hit all 18 greens on Sunday, and when you plug in how small the greens really are at Harbortown, that's pretty amazing feat. All right, let's take a little trip up the coast and head to Connecticut for the Travelers. Ches Reavie, defending champion, they'll be playing it at TPC River Highlands again. No spectators, Jay.
And it's sad because it's the best field they've ever had. Period, bar none. Not that this wasn't a good event, but it was also in that category of time between the U.S. Open and the Open Championship. And guys really pick and chose their schedule. And it usually was guys that are loyal to the event. You mentioned Ches Reavie. Here are listen to these groups. I mean, this sounds like the Thursday at a U.S. Open. DeChambeau, McIlroy, and Mickelson. Kepka, Xander Schauffele, and Justin Thomas. John Rahm, the defending champion Reavie, and last week's champion Webb Simpson. And let's throw this one in. Dustin Johnson, Colin Morikawa, and Jordan Spieth. I mean, this is a stalwart group. The only guy we're missing, or the only guys we're missing, Tiger, obviously, and your hope is he plays one of the two at Memorial. No indication yet, really, from the Tiger camp. All quiet on that front. But, I mean, this... just about everybody who can play is playing.
Yeah, and I think we'd be remiss, Jay, if we didn't bring up the name Colin Morikawa. Since he turned professional, he has a victory. That's impressive enough. But this was his 22nd event as a pro. He's made all 22 cuts. The record for that is 25, held by Tiger Woods to start his career. Colin Morikawa is unbelievably consistent. I mean, your first 22 starts out there and you make every cut. Good golly, what talent this young man has.
Well, and you talk about that, and I mentioned Berger earlier. With four rounds in the 60s at the Heritage, he extended his streak of consecutive rounds at par or better to 32. Now, let me put that in perspective. 32 consecutive rounds under par. Now, it's been done before. The man who set the bar, and I just don't know that that bar will be hit, is 52 consecutive rounds at par or better. And that's Tiger Woods in 2000, from 2000, part of 2000 to 2001. How about Steady Freddie? Freddie Funk did it 38 times. David Ogren, my goodness, did it 35 times. But with four rounds, if he's able to shoot four rounds under par this week, Berger will move right behind Fred Funk to third on the all-time list of consecutive rounds at par or better.
And here's a guy that not too long ago was out with a wrist injury. Prognosis was maybe he wouldn't be able to play again. Well, he's certainly not only playing again, but doing it in very fine style.
Enjoy golf as it was meant to be played at Gateway National Golf Links, a stunning links-style course in the St. Louis area. After all, it is the number one public golf course in St. Louis, and it's the only one with bent grass fairways. Only public course in the region with bent grass fairways. Gateway National offers golfers the rare opportunity to return to the rich traditions of the game with rolling links in the heart of the country. Gentle mounds and plenty of tall grasses. Spacious fairways, and of course, when you play number three, well, you just aim for the Gateway Arch. That's right. The iconic St. Louis Arch is right there. Gateway National Golf Links, the number one public golf course in St. Louis and the only one with bent grass, with a friendly staff to make your day a memorable one, to make your tee time the best way and the best rates are online at gatewaynational.com. An added perk, if you live here in the St. Louis area, you purchase a season pass. Walters Golf Management manages eight other properties, and you'll get playing privileges at those golf courses. Gateway National, always in great shape. And remember that website, gatewaynational.com. That's where you'll find the best rates, gatewaynational.com. You're listening to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, and we're heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or you could just ask your smart speaker Alexa, and you'll be connected.
Well, there's been some up-to-the-minute developments on the PGA Tour since Jay and I discussed what's going on, and that was a press conference held by Jay Monahan. Let's bring in Alex Maselli. He has the scoop on actually what transpired. Decipher for me. It seemed like a couple of things. Am I wrong? I got the impression that the PGA Tour is feeling some responsibility. If they, you know, pull the plug on the tour, that automatically gets the plug pulled on the PGA Championship and maybe the Open and maybe not the Masters.
Well, I think if the PGA Tour decided to stop playing, that would be a problem for those three organizations. Because, first of all, you know, you would have players not playing and then all of a sudden showing up. That's not going to happen. I think, secondly, they rely, and like, let's take the PGA of America, who's going to have their championship in August. They're relying on the PGA Tour to actually, like, put all the programs in place so they can just go ahead and adopt the same programs. And I'm sure the USGA is doing the same thing. If all of a sudden the PGA Tour's programs don't work, or they haven't been updated, or whatever you might want to think, then all of a sudden these organizations are like, well, no, we don't feel comfortable then bringing players in here and doing this, even though we're not going to have fans. So I think that, you know, if the tour decided to stop tomorrow, that would put the death knell into those events as well.
So the tour, just rounding out the numbers, somewhere in the vicinity of 3,000 tests, about 7 positive. It doesn't sound like a big number, but, you know, in reality, what is the number that do you think Jay Monahan has in the back of his mind?
I don't actually think he has a number. I think what he's looking at is, how is the system working? How are their protocols working? If he feels they're working well and yet people are getting, they're coming up with COVID, he'll look into himself and say, is this our fault? Meaning, are we not doing everything we can do? Or is there some personal responsibility on the player and the players are being irresponsible? I think some of these things that are in place right now are very good. And I think the reason why these players have probably gotten COVID has nothing to do with the protocols. I think it's poor responsibility or irresponsibility on the players. And I mean, just as an example, when Nick Watney went in on Friday and got tested by the PGA Tour, the tour let him go ahead and go out on a driving range. And he talked to Rory McIlroy, talked to Brooks Koepka. Now, first of all, I would never have let that happen. So that's a fault on the tour's part. But yet the tour came back and said, yeah, but he wasn't even wearing his mask. And the question is if Nick Watney wasn't wearing his mask there, where else was he not wearing his mask? And is this how Nick Watney got, you know, the disease? So there's always trying to figure out exactly how it happens. But I think the players have to take more responsibility. And even though Jay Monahan on Wednesday did not say that per se, I thought it was implied that he believes that the players need to take more responsibility and need to take this more seriously than they are.
Well, Alex, I think it's a little more implied based on what he said when discussing the stipend. A player now that comes down with this during the course of a tournament would be eligible for $100,000 if he had followed all of the protocol, and caddies for $10,000. I think that was a very subtle but very powerful way of saying, hey, guys, you know, we have this plan, but we need you to implement it to the fullest degree in order for it to be successful.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Bobby. And the other part of that is it's not just what you do inside the bubble. It's what you're doing outside the bubble. What I think is interesting is the European Tour. The European Tour is going to really force, like the NBA is going to force their players to stay in the bubble the entire time they're down in Orlando. The European Tour, when they launch in about a month, not only do the players and the caddies and the teachers, but even the media are tested and are inside that bubble, meaning they have to stay inside that hotel. They have to eat inside that hotel. That is not the case with the PGA Tour. Now, of course, there's always exceptions to every rule. I mean, Justin Thomas, along with Ricky Fowler and Jason Duffner, are staying in houses. They're not going out. They're bringing in their private chef. Okay, that is responsibility. Where if you were in Hilton Head last week, you know, and trying to find a place to eat, which was full of people and most of them not wearing masks, going out and eating in those environments are just, it's just a way of being irresponsible. And really, you're bringing everybody's livelihood into jeopardy by doing things like that.
It was interesting to note that Graham McDowell, you know, it was his caddy that had the positive test, but he opted to withdraw because of the close proximity, but he opted not even to fly. He elected to drive from Hartford down to Orlando. I found that a little unusual.
Well, I don't, because I believe that everybody's concerned about flying. I think if you read everything you can about this, one of the worst things you can be doing right now is flying. Because you're in a contained environment, you cannot control the people that are around you, and they shouldn't be around you. But unfortunately, depending on your airline, some airlines don't care if they're next to you or not. And, you know, and then, like, let's say if you were flying from the East Coast to the West Coast because you're going to the PGA Championship, that's 5+ hours of being in a contained, in a close environment with people that you don't even know and certainly probably don't even trust. I mean, how many times do you go on planes and people are coughing and this and that? And I mean, all that, and that's not going to make it, just because you're wearing a mask is not going to make you safe in that environment. So yeah, I understand that completely. I would be much more comfortable driving. In fact, I've already written, I think a week or so ago, that if I go to the PGA Championship, I'm going to drive from the East Coast to the West Coast. And I understand that some people will think that's ludicrous, but you know what? At the end of the day, I feel safer than getting on a plane.
I agree with the driving. Matter of fact, our plans are identical to yours if we get selected and opt to go to San Francisco. I think the only safe and prudent way is to drive.
Yeah, and you control the environment, too. You control what you're doing. Just all around. And I just cannot get my head around getting on a plane. I'd love to be in Europe for the first two events of the European tour that they're going to have in England, but I can't get my head around flying. So I'm not going. And I feel the same way here. I mean, the next time I plan on being on a plane, at least right now, tentatively, is October. And that's only if I feel that things have gotten better and I feel comfortable with it. If not, that's just not going to happen.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
So on behalf of our executive producer, Janice Self, Jay Randolph Jr., and myself, Bob Bupka, big thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at The Grill Room Golf Show.